Ogni alle aec Selg sirgulia Ja heitta endalt Orja ry
Tere, and welcome to History of Estonia podcast, Season 5, Episode 5. This is your host, William Parsley. In this episode, we discuss Estonia's foreign and security policy since restoration of independence with Dr. Kristi Raik. Dr. Raik is the Deputy Director and Head of the Foreign Policy Program of the International Center for Defense and Security as of January 1, 2023. She is also an adjunct professor of international relations at the University of Turku, Finland. From 2018 to 2022, she was the director of the Estonian Foreign Policy Institute at the ICDS, and prior to that, she served as a senior research fellow and acting program director at the Finnish Institute for International Affairs in Helsinki, and an official at the General Secretariat of the Council of the European Union in Brussels. Kristi has published, lectured, and commented widely on European security and EU foreign policy, including the EU's relations with Russia, Ukraine, and other Eastern neighbors. Kristi is also an expert on the foreign and security policies of the Baltic states and Finland. She has provided expert contributions to the Estonian, Finnish, EU, and NATO institutions. Kristi has a PhD from the University of Turku. On September 22nd of this year, Dr. Raik was awarded the Finnish White Rose First Class Knight by the Government of Finland. This honor can be granted for distinguished service to Finland. Some examples of people who have received the Finnish White Rose First Class Knight are Martti Ahtisaari, former president of Finland and Nobel Peace Prize laureate for his efforts in conflict resolution and mediation, Tarja Halonen, former president of Finland and co-chair of the World Commission on the Social Dimension of Globalization for her advocacy of human rights and democracy, Linus Torvalds, creator of the Linux operating system, Jean Sibelius, composer and national icon of Finland, and Tove Jansson, author and artist of the Momin books and comics. Welcome to History of Estonia podcast, and congratulations, or palju õnne, Dr. Raik.
Thank you so much for the kind words, and I'm very happy to join the program.
Okay, let's start off with the questions. How has Estonia's foreign policy evolved since the restoration of independence?
When Estonia restored independence in 1991, it was very clear that the orientation was about return to the West. Because of our identity, because of our history, our values, that was a very strongly shared sentiment among Estonians, which meant then very rapid reforms to establish democracy and market economy. And in the foreign policy, it meant rebuilding close connections to the Western countries from which we had been cut off by the Iron Curtain during the Cold War time. But of course, in the early 1990s, it was all very uncertain, and Estonia started rebuilding an independent state from scratch. And Russia was still influential. And let's not forget that the former Soviet troops, now Russian troops, were still in the Baltic states when the restoration of independence took place. So in the first years of restored independence, the number one foreign policy challenge was to achieve a removal of the occupying troops from the territory of Estonia.
Right.
And this was not at all easy. Maybe people in Western countries remember the time of the 90s as a period when relations with Russia were easier and friendlier. but in the Baltic states, we have a somewhat different perspective, because Russia was not actually willing to withdraw its troops. It still had this idea that Russia was entitled to a privileged role in the post-Soviet space. It wanted to still maintain its sphere of influence,
right,
which was, of course, in contradiction to this principle, which Russia had also subscribed to, that every nation in Europe had the right to choose its own orientation and was fully sovereign. So it was in August 1994 that the Russian troops left. That was a major milestone. And only after that, Estonia could really focus on the goal of membership in the major Western organizations, the European Union and NATO. And for NATO in the 1990s, it looked kind of less realistic. So in the second half of 1990s, the main focus was actually to prepare for accession to the European Union, to meet all the conditions, to convince the European countries that Estonia was actually a good candidate. Then in 2001, with 9/11, the situation with regard to NATO changed somewhat, and because the war against terror became the main priority for NATO and for Western security policy, that kind of made it easier for the Baltic states to get in to the alliance. So it happened that in 2004, Estonia joined both organizations, and that was like the culmination of all these efforts to return to the West. And from then on, the focus was then on finding Estonia's place in the Western organizations and defining our priorities in efforts to shape the Western agenda. Someone has called this moment of 2004 a point of zero gravity, because these big goals had been achieved. And now the question was, so what do we do with membership? What do we want to achieve next? And then the right. focus moved to some new priorities, especially support to the new eastern neighboring countries of the EU, namely Ukraine and Georgia and Moldova. So that became an important priority for Estonia, and it still is an important priority today.
Right. What are the critical objectives of Estonia's foreign and security policy?
Well, I would say the fundamental objective is to secure Estonia's independence, its sovereignty, well-being of the Estonian people, and also the survival, the existence of the Estonian nation and the Estonian language. Right. And we have to remember that this is a very small nation, a very small language group. So it is not obvious that we are able to maintain our own independent state with all the functions that go with it. So that is really the purpose of the Estonian state and its foreign policy, to make possible the existence and survival of the nation. And how then that can be best achieved? What Estonia has learned from its history is that we need strong allies in order to be able to survive.
Absolutely.
Next to a neighboring country that is dominant and has this historical tendency to impose control over its neighboring countries. Russia has been an empire for centuries, and the same imperialist instincts are still guiding Russia's approach to its neighboring countries. So for Estonia to be independent, it needs strong allies in the West who are committed to defending the principles of sovereignty, even for the smaller nations, and principles such as territorial integrity, and the principle that conflicts have to be solved without resorting to violence. We are speaking about the so-called rules-based order. It has become a bit of a slogan that is used a lot in the West, and sometimes maybe not thinking so deeply what it means. But in Estonia, I think we have a very strong understanding of why it is so critical for small states in peripheral location, in a difficult geopolitical location, that the West has this collective determination to defend the rules-based order. So that is really at the core of the Estonian foreign policy. And that is why, now that we look at Russia's war against Ukraine, it is so critical for Estonia that Ukraine should win this war, because that's where Russia is violating all these main principles of European security that guarantee our independence. So if Russia gets away with this aggression in Ukraine, that would severely undermine Estonia's security.
How has Estonia's relationship with NATO developed over the years?
Well, as I said, in the 90s already, Estonia had the goal to join NATO, but at the time it seemed maybe far away. But then it became possible in 2004 when Estonia became a member in NATO. That meant getting the strongest possible security guarantee, which Estonia felt very necessary to have. But at the same time, we have to remember that the whole security and defense policy debate in NATO, in Western countries, at that time was completely different from what we have today. And that was the time when priority was very much on fight against terrorism. It was a very common idea in the West that there was no kind of direct conventional military threat to any member of NATO or the EU. There was the idea that major war in Europe was regarded as highly unlikely. Russia was not really seen as a threat. So these were the perceptions at the time. And when the Baltic states joined NATO, they still felt like they needed NATO membership primarily in order to have security guarantee vis-a-vis Russia. But their views on Russia, their assessment of Russia as an imminent or potential threat was not really shared by most of the allies. So it meant that in the first years of NATO membership, the alliance did not actually have a contingency plan for defending the Baltics, because it was thought that this was unnecessary. And any even talk about that was then seen in Western capitals as unnecessarily provocative. Things changed a little bit in 2008 with the Russia-Georgia war, which was the first time when Russia actually did use military force against a neighboring country, like after the end of the Cold War. And I said things changed a little bit, because although this was a shock, the main reaction in the West was that let's just try to get over it as quickly as possible. And then came the policy of reset of the US towards Russia, and Russia got away from this situation with the lesson that the West was not really ready to do anything serious to stop Russia's aggression or to punish Russia for aggressive behavior. But at least what happened after 2008 was that NATO started to think about, you know, possibly maybe there is a need one day to defend the Baltic states, and it made the contingency plans in the subsequent years. And then, of course, 2014 was a more important turning point when Russia annexed Crimea. It's the first time when borders in Europe were changed by force, like after the Second World War. It's the first time after the Second World War. So this was a bigger shock. And then Russia also started a war in eastern Ukraine and supported the rebels in that region. After that, NATO did get more serious about being prepared to actually defend the Baltic states. And then came the concept of enhanced forward presence in the eastern flank countries, and the attitudes really changed, so that now NATO recognized that actually a military presence of NATO on the eastern flank is needed in order to deter the Russian threat. And then moving further came the full-scale war against Ukraine in 2022, which brought an even stronger change in the NATO attitude. And now we are really back to the historical task of NATO to provide a collective defense and deterrence vis-a-vis the Russian threat. Now we have this consensus in the alliance that this is what NATO needs to prioritize. And now NATO is working on new defense plans, which for the first time since the end of the Cold War actually include a detailed plan about how to come to defend the Baltics, who will be involved, with what kind of forces, what kind of equipment, and it's all going to be exercised. So this is really a new step and something that is hugely important for the Baltics. And let's remember that the purpose of having this clear military commitments of NATO is to make sure that war will not come to our territory, but we need to have strong enough deterrence so that Russia does not even dream about attacking any of the NATO countries, because it knows that NATO is ready to respond.
What role does Estonia play in EU foreign and security policy?
Well, in the EU, Estonia's focus ever since 2004, when we joined, has been very much on supporting the EU's eastern neighborhood countries. Very soon after the Big Bang enlargement, when Estonia became an EU member, there was the so-called Orange Revolution in Ukraine, with hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians coming to the streets in Kiev and protesting for democracy and for European orientation of Ukraine and against rigged elections, which took place at that point of time. And that was the first very strong expression of Ukrainians in favor of a European orientation. And until that time, until 2004, I would say Estonia didn't really have that much time even to think about the fate of the other post-Soviet countries, because it was so focused on getting to the EU and NATO itself. But now came this new situation where Ukrainians showed support for European orientation, and Estonia felt that it was in its interest to support the Ukrainian aspirations, and also that its own experience of rebuilding the state and doing all the reforms to achieve democracy and functioning rule of law and market economy, that this was something that could be a useful model or example for some of the other countries in the former Soviet Union, which had not been as successful in their reforms in the 1990s. So Estonia launched development cooperation projects with a focus on Georgia and Ukraine and Moldova, kind of trying to assist their reforms. And it also became an advocate of further enlargement of the EU. Ukraine was asking for EU membership already 20 years ago.
Right.
But there was no sufficient support in the EU to give any promises. But the Baltic states and Poland, among others, were even then arguing that Ukraine should have a so-called membership perspective, a promise that when it meets the criteria, it can join. Now we are in the situation since last year that Ukraine did actually achieve the candidate country status because when it became under full-scale invasion of Russia and it was bravely fighting back and fighting for European values and for its right to be part of Europe, then the EU felt that it has to answer positively to the Ukrainian aspirations. But Estonia has been working on that direction for many years. But then otherwise in EU foreign and security policy, becoming a member in this union of now 27 member states, it really was a learning process then to understand that when Estonia wanted to promote its priorities in the EU, it also had to be a constructive member state. It could not only be interested in its own national priorities, but it also had to show an interest in the priorities of other countries and show some interest, for example, in the southern neighborhood of the EU and the in the African countries and have a more kind of nuanced foreign policy agenda. So Estonia was kind of also looking for ways to then not be a country that only has like one foreign policy interest, and that is Russia, and then because of its concern about Russia, its support to Ukraine, but then also that it has strengths that are internationally relevant, especially the experience of digitalization became also a very important issue in Estonia's foreign policy and
right.
Estonia's experience in the field of cybersecurity. So mm-hmm. this is something that also became a priority for Estonia in the EU, in NATO, in the United Nations, in its development cooperation policy, because the digitalization experience and the strong cybersecurity expertise is something that really is globally kind of interesting and has become a kind of flagship issue of Estonia.
Yeah, it sure has. How has Estonia's foreign policy towards Ukraine changed over time?
I mentioned the Orange Revolution already in 2004. That was an important moment for Estonia's Ukraine policy. It kind of showed that Ukraine did have a strong European aspiration that Estonia was willing to support. And I would say there has really been a strong continuity in Estonia's policy towards Ukraine ever since then. Of course, there were then more difficult periods in Ukraine when after the Orange Revolution, Ukraine was not very successful in its domestic reform efforts, and it was also not really getting any promises from the EU about the possibility of joining. Then became some kind of reform fatigue in Ukraine and Ukraine fatigue in Europe. So there was a period when Ukraine had a somewhat more Russia-leaning leadership, President Viktor Yanukovych, who was elected, I think, 2010, if I'm not mistaken. And then was in power when Ukraine was supposed to sign the association agreement with the EU, but then under pressure from Russia, Yanukovych made a U-turn. That was in late 2013,
right,
which caused then Ukrainians once again coming to the streets in big masses and protest against the leadership. And people were really expecting that Ukraine would have the association agreement with the EU as a next step in kind of getting closer to the EU. And then we had these big demonstrations, big protests, with which the government tried to violently crack down in early 2014. But eventually Yanukovych was forced to escape Ukraine. He escaped to Russia, and that meant the kind of victory of the protesters, victory of the Maidan, but at the same time, Russia reacted by occupying Crimea and by starting the war in eastern Ukraine. So in all these very dramatic developments in Ukraine, it was evident that Russia was aiming to rebuild its sphere of influence in the post-Soviet space.
Mm-hmm.
And why it mattered so much for Estonia, Estonians understood that if Russia is successful in Ukraine, then we might be next. And the Russian imperialist ambitions won't stop in Ukraine. Ukraine had a very special place in the Russian understanding of Russia's great power status and the sphere of privileged interest. But the Russian ambition was certainly broader than that. So for Estonia, there has been this very strong understanding that it is our existential interest to help Ukraine develop as a sovereign European nation and to pursue the European orientation that it actually wanted to pursue.
What are the main challenges that Estonia faces in its foreign and security policy?
The challenges, of course, are many in the current international context of a lot of uncertainty and turbulence. One of the big challenges is how to keep the United States involved in European security. Because, as I said, Estonia believes that it needs to have strong allies in order to protect its sovereignty. And the US is the most important ally and the most capable ally in providing really a serious defense and deterrence against Russia. So the possibility that the US might in future be less committed in Europe is something that we need to take very seriously. Of course, this has been a long time discussion over many years, whether the US will pivot to Asia and pivot away from Europe. It didn't quite happen during the time of the presidency of Donald Trump. Actually, what we experienced in the Eastern flank countries was that the US increased its presence in our region. Although at the same time, Trump was known to be very kind of critical of NATO and raising questions about whether the US should actually leave NATO and stop its contributions in Europe. But the practical policy was still something different. Now we have again this prospect with the US elections next year that maybe once again this risk that the US will reduce its commitment to Europe is there. And the most important way really to deal with this situation is for Europeans to do more for their own security and defense. And this is really what the Baltic states are trying to do. This is what Poland is trying to do. The Baltic states are spending this year more than 3% of their GDP on defense. So really above the 2% target level that has been defined by NATO. Poland is spending even more, 4%. That's all because there is this recognition that we need to be stronger ourselves. And that then also helps us to maintain the alliance with the US if we can be more relevant, relevant security producers ourselves. But this is a difficult process in Europe more broadly. Everyone talks now about the need for Europe to do more for its security and defense, but the reality is changing very slowly, and it's difficult for Western governments to suddenly increase defense spending a lot in the situation where the populations in Western countries don't feel a kind of immediate threat to their own security, like we feel in the Baltic states. So that's why I think the change is happening more slowly in other parts of Europe. But this is in general the kind of main challenge now for Estonia to make Europe stronger, to keep the transatlantic alliance strong, to maintain Western unity as much as possible, and then also to maintain a kind of clear-eyed view on Russia, which now finally has become broadly shared in the West. So our challenge is to make sure that Western countries now develop their security and defense policies in a manner that really prepares them to manage the Russian threat for a long time in the future. It's not going away anytime soon, because right. We cannot dream about Russia one day changing and becoming a different kind of maybe post-imperialist country. But we don't know if and when that kind of development will happen.
People have been dreaming for that for a long time now. How does Estonia approach its relations with Russia?
Estonia's Russia policy really is focused on shaping a kind of collective Western policy vis-a-vis Russia. Especially since February last year, when the full-scale war started, there can be no talk of any bilateral relationship. The ties are broken, and Estonia has been very vocal in insisting that one should not think about any sort of normalization anytime soon. We don't think it will be possible. So the question really is how to manage the Russian threat. And right now, it means that the focus has to be on assisting Ukraine and providing Ukraine with the military support and economic and political support. The aim is for Ukraine to win the war, which means that the Russian troops should leave all the Ukrainian territory, all the occupied territory should be liberated, and Ukraine should be able to restore its territorial integrity. And also Russia should take responsibility for the war crimes it has committed and for the damage that it has caused by its aggression. So this is the ambitious goal. And to what extent this will be achieved will really then define, I think, the future of the Russian-Western relations, and also the future of Russia itself. One reason why it is so important to defeat Russia in Ukraine is that looking at the history of former empires in Europe, we can see that it really takes a long, difficult process for countries to give up an empire and to develop a different kind of self-identity. And usually that process has involved then defeats in wars and kind of a learning process that it is not really sustainable or rational to try to hold on to an empire. So this is something that a defeat in Ukraine might possibly kind of launch in Russia, this thinking that actually the Russian very kind of old style idea of empire is actually something that does not serve Russia well. But again, whether we get to that point, it's uncertain. But I think the best possibility for the Western countries to have influence on Russia's future now happens through Ukraine, whereas the ability of the West to have a kind of direct influence on Russian development is very limited.
How does Estonia view Western relations with Russia?
Yeah, that's, I think, what I really addressed to some extent already. Views on Russia have really become very close to the Baltic views. So in the past couple of years, we have come to a completely new situation in that sense. The Baltic perception of Russia and the threat perception is now broadly shared by the West. And so this is now the new understanding to build on. And to continue working on strengthening of European defense and deterrence vis-à-vis Russia, also to make sure that the sanctions policy is implemented and continued as long as necessary. And furthermore, it's important that the West puts kind of obstacles to Russia's efforts to rebuild or strengthen its military capability. So we can imagine when one day the war in Ukraine will be over, then it's very much possible that Russia will kind of focus on rebuilding its military might. And the assessment in Estonia, in the Baltic states, is that it would take just a few years, maybe up to 5 years, for Russia to rebuild its strength. And then it's possible that Russia will still not abandon its old imperialist approach to neighbors, that it will still try to restore its sphere of influence, if necessary, by force. But then the Western countries can put limits on Russia's ability to maintain and rebuild its military might through the sanctions policy. That's one important part of the Estonian positions. So it's really all about managing the threat and making sure that we can have stability and security in the eastern flank of NATO in a situation where Russia remains a very difficult neighbor. And of course, ideally, one day we would kind of get beyond that to a more kind of normal relationship. But the Baltic states are not very optimistic that this could happen anytime soon.
What are the main priorities of Estonia's foreign and security policy today?
Once again, Ukraine, which we have discussed already, it's really the most urgent priority. And it is quite remarkable that Estonia has been supporting Ukraine more than any other country when we look at kind of the proportion of Estonia's GDP. The support has been more than 1% of our GDP.
Right.
There is very broad national consensus. And I would say there is a kind of moral and humanitarian aspect to this support. It really is so wrong what Russia is doing against Ukraine. It's from a humanitarian perspective, it's terrible. And we feel we need to support Ukrainians because of this moral aspect. But then there is also this kind of self-interested security interest that we understand that we need to support Ukraine, and it's better to then give away our weaponry so that Ukraine can use it to defeat Russia in Ukraine, rather than wait for Russia to succeed in Ukraine and then come to our doors.
Understandable.
This is the reasoning, and that's why Estonia was really starting to give military support to Ukraine even before the full-scale invasion. There were not many countries that did so. It was US, UK, Poland, and the Baltic states. But then most of the Western countries only started giving military support after the full-scale invasion, and even then kind of with small steps and being very cautious about it. But the Estonian point has always been that we need to do the maximum to help Ukraine win the war. Unfortunately, the assistance has not been as fast as we would have liked it to be, and that's also the reason why this war has been prolonged. But we have no other option but to just continue our support to Ukraine.
Right. Prior to the war in Ukraine, the NATO defense plan was to use Estonia as a tripwire, which was designed to give up Estonian territory temporarily until NATO would be able to mobilize and respond. After seeing the crimes against humanity that happened in Ukraine in places like Bucha and Mariupol, this tripwire plan was publicly called out by Prime Minister Kaja Kallas. How have NATO and Estonia's plans for the defense of the country evolved?
We have really seen very important development of NATO's defense plans in our region. Indeed, what we have seen in Ukraine is that when Russia occupies some territories, the consequences are horrible. So Estonia was indeed making this point last year that we can't have a defense plan which foresees that Russia first might occupy parts of our territory and then NATO would come to liberate this territory. That could be really fatal for the Estonian nation.
Yeah.
So now the new plan focuses on being ready to push back aggression from the very first moment. So not to allow any territory to be occupied, but to actually have defense plans which are ready to push back immediately. And that is now work in progress in NATO. These defense plans are, of course, not for public information, but there were decisions taken at the Vilnius summit, NATO summit in July this year,
mm-hmm.
and now the work on the implementation of the new defense plans is going on, and this is very important for the Baltic security.
How will Sweden and Finland's accession to NATO affect Estonia's security?
It is absolutely very important and very much welcome for Baltic security to have Finland already as a NATO member and then Sweden hopefully also joining soon. Because it will really change the strategic balance in the Baltic Sea region. NATO will gain new strategic depth, which helps its defense planning for the Baltic states. NATO's deterrence vis-a-vis Russia will be much stronger in the whole Nordic Baltic region. And this is not so much to do with what exactly will be the contribution of Finland to the defense of the Baltic states. Actually, Estonia understands very well that even as a member of NATO, Finland still continues to have its own very long border with Russia, and it prioritizes still its ability to defend the Finnish territory. Estonia is not expecting a major contribution from Finland in the Baltic states, but it's really important that Finland and Sweden will be part of NATO territory and part of NATO defense plans. And with Sweden joining even more clearly, then the whole Nordic-Baltic region will be part of the same defense alliance, actually for the first time in history. So this is really remarkable. And Sweden is also, I think, open to considering its contribution to Baltic defense. Its geographic location is very important for the defense of the Baltic states. So that will be a big difference for NATO.
In an article that you and Martin Hurt, the former Estonian Minister of Defense, penned titled "Building European Security Against Russia, A View from Estonia," you wrote, quote, "Perhaps the most confusing aspect of the EU debate on strategic autonomy is that there has always been agreement among member states that EU defense policy is complementary to NATO, which remains the foundation of collective defense for its members, and the EU has not aimed to take over this role. Therefore, the EU had neither serious intention nor capability to become an autonomous entity taking care of its security and defense. And yet the concept of strategic autonomy has been extensively used," end quote. The United States is, of course, a democracy. The appetite for supporting European security could waver if someone from the conservative MAGA wing of the Republican Party were to be elected in the 2024 presidential election. This could put Estonia and other Baltic republics in a precarious situation vis-a-vis Russia. What, if anything, can Estonia and other Baltic nations do to provide an alternative path to ensure security without the United States if worse comes to worse?
Well, as said before, the most important thing that Europeans can do is to strengthen their own defense capability and their readiness to take care of their own security. But the dependence of European security on the US is very strong, and it is not possible to change it quickly. And even now, during the past year, when Russia had invaded Ukraine, European states kind of woke up to this new reality that we have major war in Europe and Europeans need to develop their defense capabilities. But still, the decisions have been coming rather slow. So that is the process that we need to speed up in Europe. At the same time, all this talk about European strategic autonomy, which has been happening in the EU over the past 10 years already, it's even more unrealistic today than it was before the full-scale war, because the war has really exposed the degree of dependence of European security on the United States. And it also has meant that NATO has very clearly kind of moved back to its roots and really focusing on the collective defense and deterrence. But what is interesting development since last since February last year is that the EU has actually started to take on a new role as a security producer in Europe by giving military assistance to Ukraine and by making a bigger effort to support the development of European defense industry. And we have seen the joint procurement initiative of ammunition for Ukraine, which is a really remarkable step and was an initiative by Estonia, by the way, to make it more efficient how Europeans can support Ukraine. So there are interesting developments in the EU's contribution to European security and defense, which I think also mean that Europe is gradually preparing to take on more responsibility itself. But as I say, I mean, the US still remains very important for years to come. So if it really were to happen that there is a dramatic drop in US support to European security, it will be very difficult for Europe to cope with such a situation.
Thank you for that. And the final question, the German government's vision of Zeitenwende, which means turning point in German, is to strengthen Germany's role in European and global security, while also reducing its economic and energy dependence on Russia and China. This could have a positive impact on Estonian security, as it would make Germany a stronger and more reliable ally. However, it is essential to note that Germany has a history of putting its own interests ahead of its interest of its neighbors. For example, Germany supported the construction of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, despite the strong objections of Estonia and the other Baltic states. This raises the question of whether Estonia can count on Germany when it matters most. How will the German government's vision of Zeitenwende affect Estonian security?
Well, Germany has been really going through very deep discussions on its foreign and security policy since February 2022. And we have already seen very significant changes happening, especially with regard to energy policy, where Germany was in deep dependence on cheap Russian gas prior to the full-scale war. But then it has been surprisingly successful in getting rid of this dependence. And you might remember 1 year ago, Russia was really hoping that it could use Europe's dependence on Russian energy in order to kind of end European support to Ukraine and to achieve victory in Ukraine. And this didn't happen. Europeans actually managed to do their change in energy policy, and Germany, I think, has no kind of, there's no turning back for Germany in the energy policy change. With defense issues, it has been so far kind of slower progress, but Germany has repeated its commitment to achieve the 2% defense spending target of NATO. And it also announced this special fund to strengthen its defense capability. It has been ready to take on new commitments in NATO and on the Eastern flank in particular. Germany has committed to send a brigade to Lithuania. Let's see how quickly that will materialize. Mm-hmm. But these are all important steps, but we also see that the changes are slow and there are different political and bureaucratic and technical hurdles on the way of Germany actually taking on bigger responsibility for security and defense on the eastern flank of NATO, which is something that the US is very much expecting, that the Baltic states are very much expecting. And so I think we have to be patient and keep working together with Germany to really go through this tightening and the process and do the necessary changes.
Right. Thank you. Thank you very much for coming onto the podcast, Dr. Reich.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for coming in. Nagamist.
Nagamist.
I asked my wife, Eva Parsley, what song, in her mind, best represents the period of restoration of independence. Without hesitation, she said, Tonis Maggie, Kuit. I hope you enjoy the sample, and a quick warning that Tonis Maggie, at the end of the song, is passionate and belts out the lyrics. Enjoy.
Believe!